DJs, concerts, poetry slams, children's activities, and a festival. Details can be found at wblinc.org/WBLFest.
Hello, I'm David Whetstone, and you're listening to member-supported WPFW Washington. Once again, welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org. This is the hour of We the People right here at your Jazz and Justice radio station, in existence for over 48 years because listeners like yourselves choose to have social connectivity and provide financial wherewithal to keep us going. With those resources, we seek to build a better world, better communities, one broadcast at a time. I'm your host, David Whetstone. But importantly, I always want to get you to subject at hand, have you focus on what our guests will share and offer us. It's Memories of Love Returned, a documentary. On April 24th, 2002, filmmaker Antare Guma Mbaho Muine's car broke down in the small town of Mbirizi, Uganda. While waiting for the car's repair, he stumbled upon a photo studio and met photographer Chibate Aloysius Salongo, whose work dated back to the late 1950s. This chance encounter turned into a 22-year journey documenting and exploring Chibate's life and photography, as well as the profound impact it had on both Natari and the lives of the communities he documented. Mr. Muine is a Ugandan-American stage and film actor, playwright, photographer, and documentarian. He earned his master's degree in fine arts from New York University's graduate acting program at the Tisch School of the Arts. He also studied at the University of Virginia, the Moscow Arts Theater, and the Royal National Theater in London. Basing himself in Los Angeles, Mr. Muine's first professional role was that of Paul in the 1992 U.S. national tour of Six Degrees of Separation, for which he received an NAACP Image Award nomination for Best Actor. And you may have seen him in such films as Queen of Katwe or Blood Diamond, or possibly the TV series The Chai. Thank you for being with us this morning. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so great to be coming back to DC area with you.
And I, And again, you're most welcome to be with us. It's a pleasure to have you. Just because of my thick accent, I want you to pronounce your name for the audience so they can get it in their minds. Thank you.
One trick I use for folks is, you know the song Volare? Volare, oh, Ntare. It rhymes with my first name, Ntare. And the rest is Ntare, Guma, Mbaho, Mwine.
And Mr. Mwine, if I can call you Ntare,
yes.
Is that all right by you?
Of course.
Okay. To experience this documentary is to really understand some profound works of art. And that being said, let's start off with some of the basics. Covering your career, it's quite prolific. What are you trying to do with your work? What are some of your missions that you're trying to achieve?
Well, I joke that I am a filmmaker at heart, or a photographer at heart, but and acting is my day job. So I've been fortunate that each sort of feeds the other. And this documentary is a way that sort of merges both being on camera and behind the camera creatively in terms of writing. And it just sort of uses all the muscles. So yeah, I've been in the business for over 30 years. It's crazy. I did a play. My first professional job was doing a national tour of Six Degrees of Separation, which I performed at the National Theater in Washington, D.C. I was fortunate to come back to do had a lead role in the performance at the Kennedy Center, doing Noma Temba. So this is my third time to come back to D.C. with a project, and it's been 22 years in the making.
And I really want to dive in, but I also know that your 22-year relationship with Mr. Salongo has been an incredible journey. But how long did it take to make the documentary itself?
It's literally now, this will be the 23rd, talking to you now is the 23rd year of like having this project, getting it out and trying to put it out there. But I first met him on April 24th in 2002 and documented that meeting, not knowing it was going to turn into this feature film that would be playing in Washington, D.C., that I'd be talking to you about it. But I love documenting things, recording things. Just before we started our interview, I took a picture of our little screen and I posted on Instagram so people could see your lovely face.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love documenting things. And I didn't know that footage that I shot of Chibate 23 plus years ago would turn into this feature film. I'd made a promise to him to share his work as far and wide as possible, to make a book, do an exhibit, I thought. Unfortunately, he passed away within 4 years of me meeting him, and I hadn't kept that promise by then, and was literally, I don't know if you've ever made it, have you ever made a promise to someone who died, and it haunts you? Like, that's what it felt like. I'd made this promise to him, and I hadn't fulfilled it before he passed. And I almost felt like he was still there present after he'd passed away, saying, remember, remember. Yeah.
He does have a haunting, lovely haunting voice and presence as one would experience him. One more question about the logistics and background of the documentary. Filmmaker Steven Soderbergh is listed as the executive producer. Is there any particular backstory to that connection?
Yeah, I had the good fortune to work on this TV series, The Nick, which Mr. Soderbergh directed and was executive producer on. And I think I only had like two or three episodes on that show, second season. But we still kind of struck a friendship. and exchanged emails. I told him I make short films and explain I've made a couple a documentary, and he's like, just keep me posted on what you're up to. I emailed him like a trailer for a short film. I didn't think he was going to watch like even the like this film. And he responded, he's like, why'd you send me the trailer? Send me the whole thing. And so I was like,
Wow.
I sent him the whole thing, and he was like, this is amazing. Yeah, keep me posted on what you're up to. I went back to Uganda in 2017, and I had at that point was in a position to I could afford to have digitized all of Chibate's work. I went back to his old studio space where his wife, third wife, currently lives. Third wife, we'll get into that later, possibly. She helped me find about 50 people that he had photographed before, and I rephotographed them posing in similar poses that they Chibate had photographed them, and a lot, to my surprise, had lost their old photos. So I was like, oh well, next time I come, I'll bring you a copy of the photo Chibate took and the photo that I took. So I came back in 2019 and delivered those photos to people. More people came forward with their old photos, I sort of documented these process and sent Soderbergh like a 1 minute, 2 minute clip of these visits. And he said, well, what do you need to finish? And at that point, I hadn't thought of what the end game was. I had just been sort of taking it step by step and hadn't really looked to see what's on the horizon. And that's when I realized, all right, what is the end? And I realized I wanted to mount an exhibit of Chibate's work in his hometown. Thousands of images, a public display, document that process. And Mr. Soderbergh said, well, what's the budget? I came up with a budget, and I thought maybe he was going to direct me towards a nonprofit or a, grant funder, grant makers to like write a proposal. And he goes like, oh, you'll have a check waiting for you. You'll have a check in the mail. I was like, really? And there's no strings attached, no like delivery dates, no contract, nothing. And so I got this check from him in February of 2020. And of course, the world shut down in March. And I was terrified because I had a big chunk of change from Mr. Soderbergh and the world was on lockdown. And I was like, with the pandemic, and I was like, man, I can't, I've got to deliver. I can't say the pandemic hit and I needed money. And I was like, the one person you don't want to disappoint is somebody like that who invests. So I'm really grateful that the film has been received so well, won some awards, is now coming to DC area. We're chatting about it. You responded to it. I just emailed Soderbergh and just got a response from him today because I was at Burkina Faso and I got these little sculptures from the local artisans of these filmmakers, a filmmaker, like a statue of a filmmaker. And he's like, oh, those are so cool. Please send me one. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
Sorry, my long-winded answer, but
No,
that's.
not at all. It's rich and robust. Thank you for it. And I take it then I've done the pre-work, so I'm just going to be forthright. Your documentary appeared at FESPACO, and maybe you can tell
Yes.
people why that's significant.
The Spaco is the largest and I think the oldest of Africa. All the great giants. African giants in filmmaking have put their stamp there, have been there, are considered the father of African film. Suleiman Cisse, the great living, last living legend of father African film, was supposed to be the head of the jury for this last edition of the festival. And unfortunately, he passed away just before the festival. And it was an incredible celebration of his work, his life. At the closing ceremony, I had the good fortune to meet him in October at the Silicon Valley African Film Festival. And he was just so full of life. He was behind his little cell phone camera recording everybody. Like he just had so much energy. I was like, man, if I I hope I can grow up to be that old and that vibrant. So it was incredible to be in Vespaco, to be, they have like a street where they have statues of filmmakers, of the great African filmmakers who've won at the awards at Vespaco. And I've never been to any place in the world where they have sculptures of of filmmakers like on the main boulevard, and everyone was out doing selfies with them. So there's a great pride and love for film in Ouagadougou.
Since you've mentioned all this, where does your work fit into filmmaking of Uganda?
Well, I think it's a new medium. The creative arts, in terms of like music, is the big thing in Uganda. I think film is still lagging far behind in terms of seizing the masses and having people going in throngs to see people's work. But there's a burgeoning film industry in Uganda, and it's really exciting. There's Uganda Film Festival that takes place every year now. There's several other smaller festivals, and Lukman Ali's like one of my favorite filmmakers. He's got a film of his on Netflix. So there's a lot of great filmmakers coming up that I hope I get to work with one day. And yeah.
Allow me to reintroduce you. We're talking to Ntare Guma Mubaho Muine. He's a filmmaker, Ugandan American, and we're focusing on a very fascinating subject. The photographer, Chibate Aloysius Salongo. Our show's entitled Memories of Love Returned. It's again a pleasure to have you. You've been launching us into this story bit by bit.
I'm grateful to be here, and I'm so excited that my documentary will be coming to the DC area at the AFI Silver Theater this Sunday, March 23rd. At 3:30 p.m. and I will be there in attendance. There will be a Q&A and a reception afterwards, food and drinks. So come on through. You can go to the website tinyurl.com/AFI2025.
All right. And I was asking you about how this film fit into everything. I promise you, the one last question about the filmmaking. How did the pandemic affect the actuality of doing and making the film?
Wow, that's stressing me out already, just thinking about it. So I had all this funds from Mr. Soderbergh in February of 2020. All of 2020, nothing happened because we're all in lockdown. 2021, I think it came to December 2021. I was like, I've got to strike now. I've got to do this. And this is when Omicron, I don't know if you guys remember Omicron.
That variant, yes.
Yeah. And so we were still in that time when if you flew someplace, they would test you when you landed. And if you had COVID, you'd had to put yourself in a hotel, pay for it yourself for 2 weeks until you were cleared. And so I literally flew to Uganda December of 2021 with the plans to mount the exhibit in Uganda, not knowing if I was going to be able to pull it off, because I didn't know if I'd catch COVID on the flight or on the way, and if I'd land and have COVID and be have forced to go into quarantine. So I literally arrived in Uganda in December, was fortunate enough to pass through the COVID inspection, and literally had less than a week to mount the exhibit, to go public and say, okay, this is it. So that was so stressful. Usually you take months, or it could take a year to plan something of this scale. And we literally did it in days. And even during the filming process, people would come to the exhibit not wearing masks and were sick, and you could tell something was up. And I was filming, and I was like, I can't be wearing a mask this whole time. Like, while filming, I got to be on camera. And so I just took the risk of not wearing a mask while we were filming at certain times. So yeah, that's how the pandemic sort of affected the production of this.
Wow. So a little bit more of the personal. The issue of photographs and pictures is very important to African descended people throughout the diaspora, whether it's here in the United States or on the continent. And from what I understand, your story is not undifferent than many of us. Someone generates photographs in a family, and then they're either contended for or they're lost. How's that relevant to your experience? I suspect that's what energized a lot of your
Yeah.
project.
I was living in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, in the Berkshires with my mom, and she decided to move back to Uganda. This was in the early 80s or late 70s, giving away my age. And back then, you didn't have like a shipping company that, or she didn't use one. She just put our stuff in boxes and took it to the post office and put it in the mail and hope for the best that it would get across all the oceans and continents and arrive in Uganda. And unfortunately, it didn't. So most of my childhood photos were lost in that move from Stockbridge, Massachusetts to Uganda. I only have a handful of like childhood photos. And I think that really played a role in shaping me as an artist in terms of valuing the importance of documentation and the need to preserve and restore any work that you might have. And that's ultimately what this project is about. And we're looking at, the recent devastating fires in Los Angeles and some of the things that really were cherished were photos that were lost that can't be re replaced. Or some of the things that were first tried to be rescued were photos. We look back at our own history and how we treasure any documentation that we can find from centuries or decades ago. It's just a rare window into the past. And that's ultimately what this piece became about. And so I think that's what's resonated with folks who've seen the film is understanding and reconnecting with that.
And just to match that with a couple of things. First of all, Uganda is not well known to many of us. And from what I see of your efforts, you try to reveal that beauty, both in place and in the people. Can you talk about that a little bit, particularly in relationship to your film, but also Chibate as well.
Yeah, Uganda's known as the Pearl of Africa. It's sort of nicknamed, and it sits right on the equator. You have full range of landscapes from like almost desert terrain, like in Karamoja, to the mountain gorillas in the southern part of the country. You have these snow peaked mountains as well. And Chibate was a photographer who was working in the rural communities. He covered the Masaka district in southwestern part of Uganda. It's lush, it's green, it's just incredibly beautiful. The people work the land. And he documented all of that. He didn't take photos of people like Malik Sidibé or Seydou Keita, who were focusing on the aristocrats, the wealthy, the people in the capital city. Chibate focused on the rural communities. And he was the first person to have a motorcycle in his town, and he drove all these remote towns taking people's photographs. So you get a window into rural life over 50 years just to see how fashion changed, to see how hairstyles changed, to see just this window into the past has been really incredible for him. And I think I can't wait to bring the film back to Uganda because it's going to be, I think, an incredible celebration of 50 years.
And, you know, I hope this is not a false parallel, but there's something reminiscent, like whether it's in studio or in a setting, he seems to have a come as you are intimacy that James Vanderzee had. That's often been the history of black photographers. Mm-hmm. They really, I don't think it's anything particularly exotic, but at the same time is nonetheless powerful. And there's this embrace of person, of peoplehood, of even identity.
No, that's a great analogy, Mr. Vanderzee. It's like, you wonder how they did what they did, because it's almost as if the camera, it's almost like you're seeing into their souls. Like the camera is not even there sometimes, but it is, because some of them are looking directly into camera. So I'm not sure how he pulled it off where people seemed so at ease and not, they don't feel staged in a way. Yeah.
And they themselves seem to offer the viewer something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it's in the eyes or the pose.
Yeah. So each one tells their own unique story. And it's a window into what we don't get to see enough of is a window into love, affection, intimacy between family members, lovers, husband, wife, siblings, that we just has been so refreshing, because that's not enough. We don't see enough of that coming from the continent.
So there's the portrait making from a medium format camera. There's the use of other cameras as well. How did Chibate come about learning all this? And then your reaction was right away, aha, portraiture. We need to preserve negatives. We need to preserve the negatives.
Yeah, Chibate had a younger brother who bought a camera, a Kodak Brownie, I think it was. And he just didn't have the personality, the brother said, to be a photographer. You know, he didn't have the patience to deal with people. Like he thought of it as a business, and he really wanted just to, didn't want to deal with the customer service aspect of it. But Chibate had the personality to deal with people. He was like a magnet for people. People just wanted to be around him. And so having a camera was just a great addition, because he was like a rock star. And so his brother sold him the camera, and Chibate started experimenting, shooting it with it. And then there was an Indian merchant in Masaka who had a photo studio, Ladwa, I think his name was. And Chibate used to take his work to get developed there before he opened his own studio. And he learned from him, studied with him. And unfortunately, when Idi Amin expelled all the Asian community, Ladwa had to leave, and he sold his equipment to Chibate. And Chibate used that to set up his own studio. Yeah.
You know, I observed that he had not only great equipment, but there's a lot of Ilford products. And if anybody's a photographer, they know that's high quality stuff. It just amazed me how he had steady enough access to do that and generate, what is it, literally thousands of pictures?
Yeah. Yeah. Thousands. I have over 10,000 myself. And I know I don't have all of his work. I mean, I'm sure there's stuff that's been lost and, you know, will never be found. But yeah, he was very prolific.
Let me do this. We're at the halfway point in our show. And so I will remind people that they're listening to We the People right here on WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org. The show again is We the People. we're looking at the Ugandan photographer Chibate Aloysius Salongo, and our guest is Natare Guma Mbaho Muine. And we'll certainly find out more about this fascinating man after we bring you a few short public service announcements. Why don't you stick with us, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora is featured at the 21st New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project at AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 14 to the 27th. The festival features 29 films from 19 countries, discussions with filmmakers, and more. The 2025 New African Film Festival features the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa. Tickets and full schedule at afi.com/silver. That's afi.com/silver or at 301-495-6700. That's 301-495-6700. WPF.
Jazz lovers, the 15th annual Washington Women in Jazz Festival is back with a weekend of performances, workshops, and jam sessions at the Penn Arts Mansion in Washington, D.C. on March 29th and 30th. From interactive workshops to concerts and late-night jams, there's something for everyone. Details at WashingtonWomenInJazz.com. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
And welcome back to We the People. I'm your host, David Whetstone. Importantly, our guest, Natare Guma Mbaho Muine, is with us. And I'm trying to do justice to your name, sir. So I'm going to be a slick customer here and have you say it once again. And tell us the person we're talking about for this hour.
Thank you, David. It's an honor to be here with you and with all your listeners. Congratulations on 48 years in running. My name is I'm the writer, director on Memories of Love Returned, a documentary on the life of, and work of Ugandan photographer Chibate Aloysius Salongo. I'm coming to DC. I'll be there. So come join me this Sunday at the AFI Silver Theater as part of the New African Film Festival. There's a 3:30 p.m. screening with a post-screening Q&A with me and a reception hosted by the Uganda Embassy. There's also a subsequent screening on March 27th at 2:40 p.m. Unfortunately, I can't be there for that. I'm currently working on the new TV series, Dexter Resurrection, which I'm filming in New York. I'm in the production studio right now, talking to you from there. But if you want to come see me in DC area, this AFI Silver Theater, you can go to www.tinyurl.com/AFI2025.
And thank you. You are definitely a busy person, and even while you were making this film, you maybe you know the best way to do this is to talk a little bit about your background for a moment in this second half. You're a descendant of Ugandan royalty from the 16th century, if I'm not mistaken. You obviously value not only your own identity but the culture of your country and people, and there's this deep sense of history that's very much alive in the narration of the story and the history of your country. What did Chibate's photographs mean to the community? He definitely had impacts on individuals, but what did it mean to the community?
I really understood the scope and scale of the significance of his work when we mounted the large outdoor exhibit, the thousands, over 5,000 images of his work publicly.
And there's something unique to that. Explain to people why I'm making that claim. Where was the exhibit?
It was at a gas station, or as they called Uganda, a petrol station. It was an outdoor, there was a gas station that hadn't yet opened. It was just about to open. So it wasn't too busy. They hadn't even installed their gas pumps yet, but they had, it was like the size of a football field almost. So they had these long walls of like fencing So we mounted the exhibit on the sides of basically the side of a football field. So people could have that whole middle of the field to mill around and interact with each other and see the work. And the thing that got me was that, I mean, just imagine, like, the only equivalent I could think of is everyone who's lost a cell phone. Over a 50-year period, all those photos that were lost on a cell phone for over 50 years, and suddenly there was a public display of all those images. You can imagine the heartfelt response from people, the shock, literally the shock from some people, like, how did these pictures come back? Like, I didn't know it was possible that something from photographed from 50 years ago could suddenly be appearing here. This response was beyond anything I could have imagined. I'm just so grateful we were able to capture that on film, and that it becomes the individual stories and the sort of shock and the response and the love that people felt, that we managed to capture some of that that's in the film, and hence the title, Memories of Love Returned.
And the first half of my little interjection there, I was insinuating that we acknowledged earlier that Chibatse had a radius of travel, but you had a larger radius. And part of that is, I think in many regards, you're kind of a goodwill ambassador of Uganda. And you've been at the National Theater performing. And also, these photographs are making their way into the national zeitgeist, the national mindset. You crisscross the country, and there's a blending of your story with Chibatse's story. I think that's what I was trying to get at earlier. I kind of stumbled for a moment, but there you go. Is there anything more you want to say about that? Your travels, you...
Yeah. I went, after the exhibit came down, I decided to travel to all the different towns and districts that Chibatse photographed in. And that took over 10 hours. So you can understand the scale, like a scope of where he traveled on motorcycle. And one of the places I stopped was in Fort Poto, where my parents had their wedding. And I never knew who the wedding photographer was for my parents' wedding photo. And I just sort of speculate it could have been Chibatse. I don't know. I don't think it's possible. It might be possible. I don't know. But he covered that district. And my parents had their wedding there, and they had their wedding reception at the King Gasionga, King of Ankole, at his palace in Mbarara. And I have footage from my parents from the 1980s when we went to see the palace. And it had fallen into disrepair, and the walls had graffiti on them. It's the windows were all broken. It's just complete disrepair. And my dad was so heartbroken, he couldn't even walk into the building because he had grown up there as a child. His uncle was the king, and he went to a school nearby. And so he would stay at the palace instead of returning to the village where he lived with his parents. Fortunately, the palace has been restored, and my film captures that transformation, where you get to see the palace when it was in disrepair to it now being restored, and just drawing the analogy between preserving and restoring health, my own personal health. I reveal a sort of health struggle I went through, a health scare I went through while making the film, and talk about really the challenge that comes with trying to restore and preserve a body of work, a photographic work. So the sort of bringing the three together, preserving and restoring the palace, preserving and restoring Chibatse's work, preserving and restoring my own personal health, all sort of interweave at that point.
Speaking of preservation in the film, there's also an important little moment of, if I'm not mistaken, the Ugandan Museum was established as early as 1908. in the country. And I know you had a campaign for the what Ndere Cultural Center as well. And first of all, give us the benefit of the status of those two institutions, but also it leads to the larger thing of not only identity, but memory and history for people.
Yeah, the National Museum, Chibate had never exhibited his work. He lives around those photographers. You take your picture, give you the print, keep the negative in case you need it for later. And that was it. So he had a stack, sacks of like old negatives. And so I was shocked that he never exhibited his work. And an opportunity came up around the Independence Day celebrations to exhibit Chibate's work at the National Museum. And several of his family members had never been to Kampala, which is just like a 4 or 5 hour drive. So I brought them from Mbilisi to the National Museum, and they saw Chibate's work. And in the film, we sort of talk about where the film shares their own family struggles, the infighting that happens. Chibate had a big family and
a very big family.
Yeah, a very big family. And you know, with any family, whether it's one, two, or three people, there can be drama. But he has a big family, and so there's a lot of drama. And the film sort of delves into a little bit of that. But it was exciting to see how Chibate's work being celebrated on a national stage, the National Museum, almost became a healing moment for the family. They understood the significance of his work and how he was a hero to not just to the on a national level, because he documented so much work, so many people from Uganda, from a wide swath of the area. And it was moments of love and affection and intimacy that he captured. And that just warms so many people's heart to see these reflections of love. Yeah.
The intimacy comes with short or small degrees of separation. In fact, I don't think I'm giving much away to say one of your producers recognized his grandmother.
Yes. I was just stunned. So I've been working. Sanjiri Bashir, incredible. I mean, he was my go-to everything. He's translator, driver, cameraman, like everything. So we were there, and there was a point during the exhibit where I asked, oh no, this was back in 2019. I had asked people to bring their old photographs that Chibate had taken, and I'd re-photograph people. And his grandmother came and brought a photograph. He didn't quite recognize her, but he recognized his father in the photograph that she had. And he said, what's your connection to this photo? And she said, this is my son. And he was stunned because his father and her mother had had a falling out that had kept them separate for decades. So he hadn't seen his grandmother in decades. And it was just through this photograph Chibate took that they were reunited. And that's captured also on film in the documentary. It's just one of those incredible moments, one of many.
We mentioned earlier that you had this gigantic outdoor space of the petrol station. We call them gas stations. How were the photographs presented, and then what happened to them? I think people would be very interested in knowing that.
So I printed most of the work locally in Uganda. I think there's only a few images that I printed and brought from LA. And I knew from the outset that all of that work, the over 5,000 images that were on display at this football-sized field, almost gas station, would be left in Mbilisi for the community. So the challenge was trying to keep people to wait till the end of the exhibit. Because before I even put the exhibit up, we were just laying it out, trying to figure out how to put it up. People were identifying photos of like parents who had passed away, long lost relatives, grandparents. They wanted the pictures because they didn't have them. And I was like, please just wait till the last day of the exhibit. You can take the photos on the last day of the exhibit. Because I knew if people started taking them right at the beginning, we wouldn't have an exhibit left at the end. So on the final day of the exhibit, I gave people scissors because we had like almost like a contact sheet of big, huge contact sheets of hundreds of images. So people could cut out their individual photos. And there were larger prints, 20 by 24 inch prints that people could claim. And so on that last day, it was people coming back to claim their photos. And we recorded the stories that people told about those the photos and why they wanted them and what was so important to them. And that's just the hearts that were a window into the, it was just so heartfelt to hear the response.
Well, there's another heartfelt aspect too. It allows people to recalibrate their place in society or to deal with what's actually going on in society. And two things come to mind. One, Chibate took pictures of people of same-sex relationships, whether they were friends or lovers or what have you. I get the feeling that there was no issues for him to do that personally. And the other is there was a woman that was scandalized in the village, and I forgot which relative, but it was an opportunity for at least for him within himself to think clearly about this relative who was scandalized. I wonder if you can say more about either aspect.
Yeah. One of the things that's just so magical about his work is that it's a celebration of love, really, because he's a wedding photographer, partly. He's photographing family events, and he captured moments of intimacy, whether they were between two brothers or two lovers, husband and wife, or two women. I don't know necessarily the dynamics of the relationships of all the images, because a lot of the people had passed. The work is for over 50 years. But when the Uganda government passed the anti-gay bill, I felt like this was a window into looking into examining these photographs, because a lot of the intimacy that's displayed on camera between, it could be two brothers or it could be two lovers, is now would now not be as easy to do.
Or yeah, the simple deemed, holding of hands.
Yeah, yes. could be deemed as illegal. So that was a way to sort of examine those photographs and just talk about them in the current context, how photographers might be nervous to just shoot kind of those kind of photos.
Allow me to reintroduce you. You listeners, you're listening to We the People. Our guest is filmmaker Entare Guma Mubato Muine. And I'm sorry about the third part, but I'm going to have you repeat your name so the listeners have a clear enunciated reference.
Thank you again.
About your subject, Kibate Aloysius Salongo, the photographer who is portrayed in a documentary called Love Returned.
Thank you, David Whetstone, for having me. My name is Ntare Guma Mbaho Mwine, the writer and director of Memories of Love Returned, which is coming to the Washington, D.C. area at the AFI Silver Theater. I'll be there this Sunday at 3:30 p.m. for the screening. There's also a following screening on March 27th at 2:40 p.m., which I unfortunately can't attend because I'm currently in New York filming Dexter Resurrection, which I have to get back for. But if you want to come see me Sunday, tinyurl.com/AFI2025. And I didn't answer your question about the scandal. The scandalous. I'm not sure which one you were referring to, because there's
the woman who was
third wife, or the woman who owned the bar.
Bar, yeah.
Okay. So there's a woman named Nachi Mehra, and I don't know. I'm interested to see what your takeaway was and what I think. What I'm curious to see what other people's takeaway is. She was a bit of a rock star in terms of, when I look at it. I don't know if she was. Everyone wanted to be with her. If you had the
On
money,
all sorts of levels, by the
and
way,
if you had the money,
not just the obvious pregnant
if you had the
issue
money,
there.
she would allow you to. So she had a bar, a local bar that was the hot spot in Imbilisi that everyone wanted to go to. These doors were open to everyone. It wasn't like a high class, exclusive bar. It was open to the common man, anyone who could wanted to buy a drink and hang out. And there's a series of photographs Shibata took with her, not of her, not with himself with her, but of her with almost a dozen different men, or like half a dozen different men. And I've always
Soldiers,
like,
workers, all sorts
yeah.
of people.
And they seem romantically entwined. Like I was always like, what is this story? Like I was like totally baffled. The last thing in the world I would have ever guessed was that she was considered a sex worker. I was blown away that the small town in rural Uganda would have someone who other people would say was a sex worker. And I guess it's the oldest profession in the world, so I shouldn't be surprised.
But this whole thing lends itself also to a gentler, less salient issue, which is you get to see people, and yet in another moment that displays history, fashion, style, personality, and dignity. And dignity, yeah. I'm mindful that we're running out of time, and I do have one last question, so I'll get some of the housework out of the way, and then we'll give you the last word here.
Thanks.
I want to always express my appreciation to listeners who do listen to WPFW and those who decide to support, whether it's of large means or small means, times are hard. But those who are sustaining members and those who try their best at a one or two time or multiple time donation. The reason why you are compelled to do this, if you're with us, is that WPFW tries to build a better world one broadcast at a time. At 3 o'clock, Sophie's Parlor, one of the oldest women collectives on public broadcasting, brings you arts and culture by women, but for everyone. At 2, Zen El Amin is with Shai Wanana. The program covers Middle Eastern affairs, certainly important now. And my good friend and colleague at 1 p.m., Louisa Mutali, brings you Africa Now. And that is about African descended people, not only on the continent, but throughout the diaspora. And let's not forget that we offer music. And during the week at noontime, don't forget the blues, the Wednesday edition with Clarence the Bluesman Turner. So my thanks to them and to you, the listener, for listening to WPFW. The last question, Antari. What is the legacy that you steward or feel that Kibatse leaves us?
Wow, that's a great question. I think for the southwestern district of Uganda and the nation as a whole, and East Africa and the continent, it's been a celebration of the past 50 years of life in a rural community. And we can't get enough of that. So much of what we see on the continent is the capital cities, looking into the cities and the basically, so you don't really get to see a slice of rural life over 5 decades. So I think that's his legacy. And I'm so grateful that we've had this time to talk about it and the film now exists to carry on his work.
Well, Natari, thank you so much. And I extend my thanks to Knight Nacelle, our engineer, and the News and Public Affairs Department at WPFW. Take good care, people.
WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
Please join the WPFW family as we celebrate the life and legacy of our friend and colleague, Larry Applebaum, longtime host of The Sound of Surprise, who joined the Ancestors on February 21st. Join us this Sunday, March 23rd, at Westminster Presbyterian Church, beginning at 2 p.m., as we gather to remember Larry and his more than 40 years of service to WPFW, his long career at the Library of Congress, and his many contributions to the jazz world at large. Paul Carr and friends will be on hand to provide the music. Again, that's this Sunday, March 23rd, beginning at 2 p.m. at Westminster Presbyterian Church, 400 I Street, Southwest, Washington, D.C. For more information, go to WPFWFM.org. We hope to see you there.
African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora is featured at the 21st New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project at AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 14th to the 27th. The festival features 29 films from 19 countries, discussions with filmmakers, and more. The 2025 New African Film Festival features the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa. Tickets and full schedule at AFI.com/silver. That's AFI.com/silver or at 301-495-6700. That's 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Do you love captivating stories about our planet and the people who protect it? The DC Environmental Film Festival returns to theaters throughout the metro area March 20th through the 29th. This year's lineup boasts over 50 programs featuring films from all over the world about issues from environmental justice to wildlife conservation and our oceans. Details at dceff.org. That's dceff.org.
How do you find peace and happiness amidst all the uncertainty around us? On March 20th, the International Day of Happiness, spiritual leader Gurudev Sri Sri Ravi Shankar will be in conversation with author Arthur Brooks at the Warner Theater in Washington, D.C. for Unlocking Happiness. Practical tools to cultivate joy backed by science and timeless wisdom will be shared, including a live guided meditation by Gurudev. Details at aolf.me/UHDC.
Hello, WPFW. Festival season is here, and on April 6, noon until 7:30 p.m., Words, Beats, and Life kicks it off with the Jazz and Blossoms Park Jam. Family-friendly activities, art activations, food truck vendors, and performances will all happen in Franklin Park. Details at wblinc.org/WBLFest.
I'm Muiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.